Focus on Education with Greenwich Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, who joins me the first Tuesday of each month at this time. Good morning, Dr. Jones. Welcome. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you.
Well, can you believe it already? We're, like 3 months into the school year, heading into the Christmas and holiday break. Tell us, first of all, how things have gone for the first 3 months. What's happening around the schools?
Oh, my goodness. It's been so exciting. There's just amazing work going on across the district, and not only in the educational realm, but just in a community service aspect. I'll give you a couple of examples. North Miami's collected more than 4,000 pounds of food for neighbor to neighbor, and I know you and I have talked before about what a great partner neighbor to neighbor has been and a support for our families. The Greenwich High School Roots and Shoots Club donated Thanksgiving meals to more than 100 families. They raised more than $5,000 for those in need. On top of that, we have our football team who's headed to state playoffs next weekend. Our girls swim team finished second in the state. Boys soccer just won a state championship for the first time in decades. And it's just been such a wonderful, wonderful start to the year.
All right. 61 years, I think, for the soccer team.
It's been a long time.
Wow.
And just what a great run they had this year.
All right, fantastic. All right, how is the handling of COVID, the flu, RSV, all these other types of things? How has that impacted the schools during this this time of year?
Well, it actually feels more like it did pre-COVID in that flu season has always been a challenge during the winter months. And, I think the biggest challenge right now is figuring out which one of the three, if somebody, is ill, what is it that they are ill with? And we do know that our hospitals are running, high. There's not a lot of beds available, especially for children. So we always watch closely in our schools. And if we have, four cases, for instance, in a classroom, that becomes an issue where we notify the entire class. And, the nurses do a wonderful job of really staying on top of that.
All right. Let's talk about Central Middle School. What's the latest you can tell us about the new school?
Well, my goodness, what a hardworking building committee, first of all. They are doing terrific work. They meet every week in a formal meeting, and then there are many on the building committee. It's almost every day that are having meetings to continue to move this project forward. They're doing a great job. Right now, they're in the development design and getting an architect hired. They have $2.5 million for this phase one. And right now, that's what they'll be working on between now and June to see if they can get the design ready for the submission to the state in June. And we're just excited about it. It's a big project. It's taking a lot of hard work. And we're grateful for the community members who have really stepped up to do this work.
Okay, so that's done. But I guess there's also building committees for what, Old Greenwich School and others?
We have a building committee for the high school entryway, and they're all hard at work, first of all, let me say that. And the high school entryway went through a redesign process after the bid came back a little higher than they would like. And they are in the middle right now of requesting an interim for additional funding so they can complete that project. That will go all the way through to RTM for approval. Our Julian Curtis Building Committee is hard at work, and they are right now figuring out exactly which pieces they're going to do first. Their project is a little bit different in that it was funded by project. One of the major focal areas there will be to get the elevator designed and installed. And Old Greenwich right now is in the design phase, which is their phase one, as they prepare to figure out exactly what that building needs and to move forward with future construction.
Now, that Old Greenwich, for example, that's not going to be a new school, or is it? It'll be a renovation?
I don't know that the building committee has had enough time, first of all. I mean, they're a new building committee. They don't have their architect that they're working with yet. So all of that gets determined through the building committee process. I think people are anticipating that it's a renovation, but you just don't know until they actually get into the bones of the building, exactly where it ends up.
Mm-hmm. And back to Central Middle School, they have chosen an architect, right? SLAM out of Glastonbury, is that right?
Yes, they have. And they're a very highly regarded architecture firm known for building schools and building great schools.
Okay, good. All right, we're speaking with Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, here on Focus on Education on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com. And Vino with Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones. All right, already, boy, it seems like we just did this. Nominations already being accepted for the Distinguished Teacher Awards?
Absolutely. I think this is one of our favorite awards that we do. It just honors the best of the best. And we, in the end, six extraordinary teachers are awarded the Distinguished Teacher Award. And it's been a tradition for us since 1984. And if you come into Havemeyer and you have a chance to walk down just the front hall, you'll see all of the pictures of the winners dating back to 1984 up on the wall. And it's open to teachers, social workers, guidance counselors, instructional coaches or specialists, basically all of our certified teaching staff. And our nomination packets are available online, and they're due on March 9th. And while March 9th seems like it's a long ways away, it really isn't for this process because the paperwork is really quite detailed and thorough because it is such a big honor. And last year's winners, I will say, are just, they're all rock stars, and it's such a wonderful way for me in the spring to go and observe all six teachers and get to be in their classrooms. And it's truly an honor. And if you have an opportunity to attend their awards ceremony at the end of the year, it is so inspiring just listening to each one of the award winners speak about their passion for education and how much love they have for what they do every single day.
And among those six, there's one that's Teacher of the Year. Who was Teacher of the Year this year in Greenwich?
Tyler McCosey. She is a science teacher at Western and just absolutely phenomenal.
Now, you mentioned you go online, I guess, to get the application or to nominate a teacher. Anybody can nominate a teacher?
Yes. Yes, anybody can nominate a teacher.
Okay. So then what's the process in terms of, I mean, is there, do you do an essay on behalf of the teacher or answer questions, or what's the form look like?
It's a little bit of all of that. There are letters that are submitted on behalf of the teacher. It's a big honor. So there's a lot of information that goes into the packet. The letters that are submitted are, you know, very touching, from students, from parents, from previous students. Once all of that is submitted, then there's a nominating committee that is not part of GPS in that it's an affiliation, but it is actually an independent group that was put together specifically for this purpose all those years ago. They look at all of those applications that are submitted. There will be well over six that are submitted, and from those applications they'll narrow down to who they believe are those top six candidates.
All right, so you don't have to choose who the six are, but then you have to choose who the one is out of the six, right?
I do, and that is very, very challenging. I do. And usually the assistant superintendent is also part of that process with me, Dr. Karen Bloss.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's Distinguished Teacher of the Year. Before you know it, we're going to be announcing, and that's in the spring, isn't it?
It is in the spring, yes. Mm-hmm.
I look forward to that already, even though we're not at Christmas yet. All right. Let's not get too far ahead. All right. Speaking of which, it's not going to be too long before we might see some snowflakes flying. So what's the process behind keeping schools open or shutting them down for the day with a snow day?
Well, first of all, let me say I am so excited. We are already into December and we haven't had a snow call yet. That's great.
Shh.
I hope it stays that way. decisions are made very, very early in the morning. I try to make that call by 5 a.m. I have to touch base with Public Works, who are just such a tremendous help. They're out on the roads. They're treating the roads. They let me know, is the treatment working? Is it not working? They're also checking in to see if we're able to get parking lots cleared so that we have safe sidewalks and, you know, everybody can get into the schools. Once I have that information, then we let everybody know, we hope, by 5 a.m., and it has to be early. We have a lot of staff that commute. We don't want them on the road, and then we call school off, so we try to do it early. But also the buses start running. So, you know, if you're a bus driver, you have to get there very early to the bus lot. So we try to get ahead of that so we don't have people on the road unnecessarily on a morning when it could be dangerous. And if the roads are safe to travel, we have school. Sometimes we'll call a two-hour delay just to give Public Works more than anything and Park and Rec opportunities to get sidewalks clear and the parking lots clear. But as far as the information itself, we send out our kind of robocall to all of our families. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. It's basically on all the local television stations, radio stations. So it's pretty easy to get the information depending on how you prefer in the morning to hear the news.
It's a interesting town in terms of, I mean, there's a lot of size, but you also have near the shoreline, and then you go up into the backcountry, higher elevation. So there's always that talk above the Merritt Parkway. There's it may be snowing, it may be raining below. Makes it very complicated, doesn't it, when trying to decide where it may be raining down here in downtown Greenwich, but up in the backcountry it might be snowing. It might be very difficult. How do you deal with that?
It's very, very difficult. I would say last year was probably one of the more challenging years I've had, where it would be raining along the coast and then in the backcountry snowing. And, you know, in listening to Public Works, who also were connecting with the police department, everybody that's out on the roads in those early mornings, you know, telling us that our buses would be at risk as we head towards the backcountry. Sometimes the call must be made by one side of the community or the other, because we need to be able to run the buses for everybody. We can't cancel school for just half the school district. So it can be very, very challenging, just depending on how a snow line or the storms are coming across, you know, our district.
Let me ask you about a Zoom in case of snow days. Is that a dead issue for now?
It is still a dead issue, and we are still pushing. And I'm hopeful this year is going to be the year that our legislators will understand how valuable it is for us to be able to continue with our school. So if we have one of those days where, you know, it's a snow day and we have a lot of snow and kids need to go out and play, we would probably still have a snow day, because that's also very healthy for children. But if we're having 2 days in a row, we want kids in school. And maybe even if it's just one day, just depending if we've had several days out of school already for different reasons. But we should be able to go full virtual. And not only should we be able to do that, but it keeps a skill set going for our teachers. And, you know, we don't want our teachers to lose what they learned during COVID. We don't ever want to go full virtual like we did before. But it is a skill set, and there's no reason why we can't keep it up and be able to keep students in school, because a virtual day in January is so much more valuable than just tacking a day on at the end of June, when we tend to have a lot of students who are needing to head off for early college and summer programs and all types of activities. And so we have a higher absenteeism, and it's much more difficult to really keep students engaged when you're talking the very end of June, where in January we can have a really good virtual instructional day.
Mm-hmm. No, spring fever, too, for both the students and the teachers, sure, in June. But also, of course, complicating matters could be that if you have a storm where power gets knocked out and there's no internet, then that complicates things as well, right?
Absolutely, and that's something that we always have to monitor as well. And they do a good job of letting us know how many homes are without power, how widespread is it. And we have to weigh two different factors when there's a power outage. We did have power out, you know, in our community, but it may only be a limited area. If it's a limited area, then we're still likely, if we can get kids to school, we want them in school. But not only do we want them in school, but those students who would be home sitting in a house without power can get to school where they're going to have heat and a hot lunch and be in a better environment while they get the power back on at their house.
All right, we're going to take another break with Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, Focus on Education. 9 o'clock, it's the news, and then at 9:02, Center Stage with Pamela Kuhn. All right, Dr. Jones, let's devote this last segment to the budget. Where are we in this process?
So we started out with a guideline from the BET this year of 2.9%. And so we were able to build a budget. It was not easy to come in at 2.9%, but we did it. So that budget, the board has been combing through, you know, what's in this budget, you know, what did we not fund? What are some of the pressure areas within the budget? Because 2.9% doesn't cover contractual increases, things like the cost of expected electricity, teacher contract costs, things like that are, you know, generally 3% or much higher. Electricity especially is going up a tremendous amount next year. So we've had to reduce in other areas, and the board is going through all of those right now. We've answered their questions. The Board of Education Budget Committee will meet again this week, and that's half of the board. The committee is made up of four members, and they're going to comb through again and even a little bit more detail some of the budget aspects. And then we'll come back on the next business meeting for the board to approve the actual budget. And then it will move on to the BET. We start with the BET Budget Committee. It eventually goes to full BET, but then it goes to the RTM. It goes through all of the different RTM committees and then the full RTM. And it does take the entire school year. We get all the way up until the end of the year before the budget is actually approved.
Speaking with the superintendent of schools, Dr. Tony Jones, last week, though, board chair Kathleen Stowe, we were talking about the budget and how the American Rescue Plan figured into this, about $9.5 million coming in. Tell us about the importance of that. And then moving forward, I always think, okay, you're getting this funding, but you don't want to rely on that coming up in the future. How do you balance that, present with the future?
Well, I don't think that we could have brought a 2.9% if we had not been given this great opportunity with the American Rescue Plan through federal COVID funding, because what it's really done is helped us, especially in areas like curriculum. We have some real needs in curriculum, and we have for materials over the last couple of years. And so through this ARP funding, we're able to get the reading materials and get those up to par in what we need in K-5 and elementary level. We've been able to add those additional resources that we've needed for a middle and high school. So it's made a big difference. We would have had to build those items into our operating budget. Also in this American Rescue Plan, we are building in our preschool curriculum and preschool reading needs for early literacy, which we have not in the past invested probably in the way that we should have for our earliest learners, which is preschool. So we're very, very excited about that. And the American Rescue Planning has really helped move us forward. You know, the other thing that it has done is it's given us positions like we've been able to hire. We were able to do it immediately when the money, you know, was made available. Social workers, for instance, in elementary school, we've needed them for a very long time, but especially coming out of COVID, we've needed that support. And we've also had some other real supporting positions that we needed for intervention, for reading and mathematics. And so it's been wonderful. We're very, very careful to make sure that we are spending these dollars in a way so that we're not going to be reliant on them 3 years from now and 4 years from now, in the sense that if it was a position, we're either phasing the positions out that they helped us get through the first year, really coming out of COVID, and we don't no longer need it, or we are building them slowly into the operating budget. For instance, social workers would be a good example. In this year's current request for the budget, we've built two social workers into the budget. We've left three in the grant. And when we build next year's budget, the last three in the grant will need to be built into the operating, so that by the end of the grant, the positions are funded in the operating appropriately so. And the other materials, especially the curriculum materials, are one-time expenses. So once they're spent, we have invested in exactly where we need, and we don't have to come back and request that money again.
Now, the American Rescue Plan funding, that how long does that last? That's for over a couple of years?
It's been over, it goes through next year is when it will actually expire. It will have been a 3-year grant. And it actually is very quick, a very quick turnaround in regards to the amount of money and making sure that it's really spent thoughtfully. And districts across Connecticut, I think overall, have done a really good job, depending. We all got different amounts. But, you know, just incredibly grateful that they were able to help us in a time of great need coming out of COVID, invest in our schools.
All right, Superintendent Dr. Tony Jones. So the when does vacation start for the Christmas New Year's holiday break for the schools?
Oh, my goodness. I think we're right up until the day before. Let's see. I think it's the 23rd. So is it's the 23rd.
Yeah, Christmas is on a Sunday. So do you have a full day then on Friday?
I think we're out on the Friday, but to be honest with you, I don't have the calendar in front of me, and okay. I'm kind of day by day.
All right. So. I'm sure the kids will be on top of that, and so the teachers as well.
I know they will be. Yeah. Actually, it's an early release on the 23rd.
23rd. All right. Then back to school on January 2nd, right? Monday.
That's correct.
Ooh.
Yep.
Short vacation. Sometimes they get a week and a half this year, only a week. All right. Yeah. so it goes. All right. Dr. Jones, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we'll talk again in January. Take care.
Wonderful. Happy holidays to you as well.
All right. As Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones on Focus on Education here on AM 14.